The U.S. Supreme Court has a busy month ahead. It will issue more than 30 rulings by the end of June, not just on abortion. There are closely watched cases on religion, guns, climate, migrants. Let's preview what's ahead with Stephen Vladeck, law professor at the University of Texas. Stephen, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Can I start with a couple cases where the court is widely assumed to be ruling in a certain way, and that is religious cases. One is about a football coach praying at the 50-yard line in a public school. What do many expect the ruling to be?
Yeah, I mean, the case Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, I think the widespread assumption is that a majority of the court is going to agree with this football coach that the mere fact that he was holding prayers at midfield at the end of football games wasn't necessarily an endorsement of religion. What's trickier about this case, what really sort of came up at the oral argument, was whether it might still be unconstitutional because it's coercive, because members of the team might not have felt like they could not participate in the prayer. There's a pretty strong assumption about what the court's going to do, at least at step one. What's really left to be seen is what it does at step two.
All right, there is another a case on religious schools in Maine, and one side is asking if public money that is spent on private schools that are non-religious can also be spent on religious schools. What's the expectation there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation there is that the court's going to say yes. And I think both of these cases reflect how the current majority of the court does not put a lot of teeth into the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment and is much more focused on protecting religious exercise. So that scale keeps tipping further and further toward religious exercise and away from keeping the government out of religion.
Okay, on to climate change, a closely watched case on the federal government and whether it has authority to require states to move from fossil energy to green energy. What's at stake there?
Yeah, I mean, the stakes of West Virginia versus EPA really are enormous. It's a fight over both a Trump administration rule that had basically widely limited the power of the EPA to regulate greenhouse gas emissions and other, you know, catalysts for climate change. And the Trump administration itself had overruled the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. What's at issue here is both which of those rules ought to govern and, more generally, how much authority Congress has delegated to the EPA in the first place, which of course will have implications not just for what Presidents Obama and Trump tried to do, but for what President Biden and any future president could do, you know, to tackle what really is going to become one of the great problems, if it isn't already, of our time.
There's another Trump administration policy in play, the Trump administration's remaining Mexico policy. It required migrants seeking asylum in the U.S. to stay in Mexico or to be detained in this country. How did this migrant policy issue end up before the Supreme Court in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty remarkable case that it's hard to fathom it would have ever even happened as recently as 4 or 5 years ago. But, you know, at the request of the state of Texas, there is a Trump-appointed district judge who basically not only told the Biden administration that it couldn't unwind and repeal this Trump administration immigration policy, but actually told the Biden administration how he thought they had to carry out this policy. It's really a remarkable assertion of judicial power to dictate how the executive branch conducts not just immigration policy, Scott, but foreign relations. And so I actually think there's a decent bet that the Trump policy is not going to survive. Of course, the way that the court rules is going to have implications not just for the substance of our immigration policy, but for how President Biden and his successors can and can't unwind the policy initiatives of their predecessors. It's really, in many respects, a referendum not just on immigration policy, but on executive power.
Okay, sorry to keep moving you along. Gun rights, it is, again, horrifically in our national conversation. The case before the court is on a New York State case that could expand gun rights.
The reason why this matters is because conservatives have been clamoring for the better part of 12 years for the Supreme Court to put more teeth into the Second Amendment. And that's why I think folks are so interested in it, so watching it so closely, tying it to Buffalo, to Uvalde, because, you know, if the Supreme Court says a whole lot of stuff to ratchet up the Second Amendment, that's going to have implications for proposals to limit large capacity magazines, for proposals to raise the age at which people can buy semi-automatic weapons.
And finally, of course, the abortion rights case. We know about the leaked opinion by Justice Alito overturning Roe v. Wade. That draft was from February. I guess I want to ask you, what likely went on inside the court between February and now that we're going to learn about when the ruling comes?
I think what we'll learn when the decision comes out is whether the leak had any impact. You know, are we still going to have five justices at least who are willing to overrule Roe and Casey entirely and basically get rid of any constitutional right to an abortion? Or is the public blowback that we've seen over the last, you know, month actually going to soften that majority or at least cost it one of its votes so that we end up with a more moderate, it's a weird word to say here, but, you know, less extreme at least decision?
That's Stephen Vladeck, law professor at the University of Texas. Stephen, thank you again.
Thank you.